Welcome to Trapping Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear, coming from you from the great state of Tennessee. And it is the week after the Nationals, the NTA up in Lima. I really enjoyed getting to see a bunch of you up there. The Nationals is different than a lot of the other shows just for the simple fact that a lot of people come from so many different areas, and a lot of the Canadians come down, and they're just always so nice. And just visiting with people I hadn't got to be around in a while and see, and it's just good. It's good to do. I mean, those shows wear me out, being on that concrete and having to talk all day, because my normal life is I don't talk that much, even though you may I think I do because of the podcast and stuff. So that kind of wears me out. But it was a great location. And I'm going to talk today, when we get in the trapping part of this, about elevation and backward dirt holes. And I want to say to the guys at Ohio, which helped me so much with my demo, that was the best demo area I have ever seen in my life. It was, I don't know what it'd be like to do a demo there, because I was doing canines. But it looked great for the water, and they had examples of, they actually had beaver runs that you could see without water over them, and I'm sure those got used. But they had trees, down trees, they had grass clumps, they had bushes, they had elevation, they had bare spots. It was, if I was going to go trap somewhere, that's what I'd want to see when I was going to go trapping. And they did such a great job on that demo area that it was unbelievable. So kudos to the, I met the gentleman that actually put that together, but dang, that was impressive. So like when we get to the show here in a little bit, I wanna talk about backward dirt holes and elevations for coyotes. Cause that's, I was gonna do the demo, which I'll get into this in a minute. So we'll continue on. For that, I talked to another gentleman that moved from North Dakota down to, I think Ohio, or Indiana, I think it was Ohio. And he's only trapped in North Dakota without a trap check law, coming to a state with a trap check law. And he had several questions about that. So I figured we'd also talk about that a little bit, because you have to set your trap line up different to be efficient. It is going to be hard to deal with, but it's doable, even coming from a no trap check. And before we do that, I want to thank our sponsors, guys. If you're looking for companies to deal with, these are the guys you want to deal with. All my sponsors are straight up. They're not going to take you. They're not going to abuse you, take advantage of you in any way. They've got great prices. They've got all the products you would ever want. And they're just good people, and they're helpful people if you got a question about something. All of them. And that's the reason I'm very, very picky about who my sponsors are. And the first sponsor this week is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Alan does all my shipping for me. So when you order something from me, it's coming from Alan's shop up in Ohio. He's got a full line of trapping supplies. He's got stuff for deer, hog, bear, fish, fishing poles. I saw more fishing poles walking out of his booth at the Nationals than I've ever seen at a Nationals. So they must have been a good deal or something. And he just has everything. Trap tags, predator calls, all kinds of stuff. So you want to check it out. Just good people. Then we have F&T, everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Most of y'all know F&T. They have a show on, which I've got to be on several times on TV. Appreciate that. With QSR, they make the FB1, FB2 dog proofs, the saber tooth drags. We call them the Thor hammers, trapping hammers. All kinds of stuff for trapping they're making for quality control. And if you've ever dealt with F&T, you know you're dealing with a professional ran company. And they really want to have every customer realize how important they are to them. Next sponsor is Oki Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma, full line of trapping supplies. He's a fur buyer some years. A lot of times he has meat and glands for sale. He can come up with the dangest stuff that you're looking for. So you want to make sure you keep his phone number close when you're needing something. and Jeb will take care of you. Then we have Dunlap Lures, which is Jeff Dunlap's. He's been he started this process with his dad when he was a kid, and he's continued on up till now, and he makes a great product. Most of y'all, if you don't know Jeff, you probably heard of Soul Taker Bait and Hellfire and all those types. Those are his. High quality, sells a lot of them because they work. And he's, no question in anybody's mind, Jeff's a trapper's trapper. So that's our sponsors. Just down to earth, good people. Now, me and Jeff putting on a school towards the end of September. You can get all the information at wolfernation.com. Go to the PCG store, look under schools, and you'll see the dates, where exactly it is. It's up just a little bit outside of Alpena, Michigan this year. We've got an amazing place we're going to be staying. We're going to be actually running part of Jeff's trap line, so it's not going to be like all demo type stuff. You're going to be on a real trap line, learning about stuff. And forget, there's been a couple of guys ask about beaver, so we'll be able to actually put you in real situations instead of mock-up situations. And I think that probably after all the years I've done schools and instruction, this is probably the pinnacle of how to do it. So if you're interested in becoming a better trapper, if you're interested in learning everything that I know and everything that Jeff knows, for $1,200, that's the cheapest education that you're going to get to have for years. So just really think about it. If you're going to trap for 12 years, you itemize out, that's going to cost you $100 a year to get all the information from me and Jeff. Because we're not going to hold anything back. And to be honest, you should be better than me or better than Jeff when you leave, because you're going to have both of our stuff shoved down your throat like a fire hose while you're there. It's a lot of fun. We cut up a lot, but it's very serious when it comes to the trapping. So just keep that in mind. If you're looking for to hit that next level or be a more confident trapper, check out the Trapping Mafia School that you can find at Wolfer Nation. And Jeff's got information. He's going to be to a lot more shows than I am this year. You can talk to him personally about that, him or Sarah. And just get squared away so you can show up. All right, so at the Nationals, I had this gentleman come up to me, and super nice guy. Kids were nice, everything. And he had a question that I've never really thought about because I've never been in this situation. He's coming from North Dakota, where you don't have the highest animal populations, but you got very high quality fur. And you don't have a trap check. Now, for 95% of the listeners out there, you know, you're on basically a 24-hour check on some sets in the water that are, you know, where it's going to guarantee that the animal's gonna drown or be dispatched with a body grip. Some states will allow you 72. So basically for land trapping, pretty much all across the country, except for a few western states, it's 24-hour check. Which means you've got to go check your trap every 24 hours. Now, some states like Tennessee has a 36-hour. You can play games with a clock to get 2 days out of that. It depends. I'll let you figure that math out up in your head, but you got to run them at different times on different days. So you got two night times on a single check. If you have 36-hour, you can kind of play that game. I don't. It takes too much energy and too much aggravation with the game warden thinks that you're running two-day checks. So, but you can. But most of us on 24-hour checks, which means you physically have to be there to see if you caught something. Now, coming from a state like North Dakota, or what Montana used to be with no trap check, the majority of the guys that I've talked to would run a 5 or 7 day check, which is completely foreign to most modern trappers today. You know, you go back 70 years, running 24-hour check, except for maybe raccoons or something, was that would be a foreign concept. Because it's more efficient. You let your traps fish longer. You have more nights to catch. So just imagine if you ran three trap lines on a 24-hour check. That's the same that someone that runs a three-day check has the same opportunities you do to get there. Now, you may say, well, what if you catch an animal? That trap's no longer in use. Surely anybody can see the advantages. And with the modern day traps in certain areas, I wish it was like that more across the country, but it's not. Dealing with dogs and people and everything like that in the civilized world that we are now, most people think a 24-hour check is the way to go. But when you come from a 7-day check like this gentleman was running, with the equipment we have today, the animal's not going to be in worse shape after 7 days as he is after the first night. With the offsets and the lamination and all the swivels that we use and stuff like that, it's not the deal that a lot of people think it is. It's never done it. But it builds a mindset into running a line like that. You'll probably have out two or three, four different lines. You'll have some days off. And I didn't get into the details with this gentleman about how he actually ran that type of line. Some people will set them on the weekends and check them on the weekends and reset. And you put out as many traps as you can to have as many opportunities as you can. And while you're going through your work week, you're filling up with fur and you go harvest and reset. That may be what he was doing, maybe just running a run line, I don't know. Back in the 70s, when you do some research about guys, most of those guys would run anywhere from 3 to 5. Some of the really hardcore guys were probably running 7 different lines. So it gave them an advantage over an Easter trapper because they can run 7 trap lines to year 1, and you wonder why they have the pictures that you've seen back in the 70s and early 80s. But there's a mindset with that doesn't work as well when you go to a 24-hour check. For one, it's a foreign concept to someone that runs a 7-day-hour check that you're going to physically have to drive to a trap every day and look at it. So you're going to see your line every day. And there's some psychological things that happen. When you put a good set location on a good crossing in North Dakota, you've got 7 nights to connect. That could be the first night, the 5th night, the 6th night. You just go back and there's a good chance you're going to have a coyote, a cat, a fox, a coon. Something's going to be standing in that trap. So you're probably not used to seeing as many empty traps as someone that runs a 24-hour check, because you're seeing it every day. All the days that you didn't catch anything on your 7-day check, you're physically seeing on a 24-hour check. And that can be pretty rough on somebody that's not used to seeing as many empty traps. I definitely get that. Plus, you're thinking about the fuel cost, because it's more expensive to run a 24-hour check than it is a longer trap check. No question about that. You're going to have more exposure to people than you're not used to running a 7-day check. Weather's just terrible, you could hold off another day. You can't do that on a 24-hour check because green britches will definitely get you. So you're forced into being on that trap line every 24 hours. Now, when you look at how guys that mostly run 24-hour checks, and I didn't get into this with him, you pick more superior locations on huge tracts of ground, but you go to many tracts of ground. So you're like picking the best locations on a huge section of ground, and then you're going to another huge section of ground, and you're picking 2 or 3 spots there. So your density of traps are usually way far apart. If you're running a trap line like this, you may run 150 or 200 miles checking this trap line in the west and maybe running a realistic 100 to 120 traps. But you're picking the best places. And when you're running a long trap check, it works. Another thing the gentleman said was, when he put a trap in on these locations, he didn't move that trap till the end of season. It's totally different than what you would do on a 24-hour trap check in the east, because your catch would get terrible after a while. I mean, like non-existent. But if you've got 70 great crossing locations, is the way most Western trappers do, where coyotes are coming from somewhere and to somewhere, one badlands to another badlands, one big draw to another, to draws, to sheep, whatever that is, there's going to be, not daily, maybe not weekly, but there's going to be trickle coyotes coming across those locations every month. And you pick them up. But you're only checking it four times in that month. So it gives the illusion that you're way more successful at that location than you probably actually are, which you will see when you go to a 24-hour check. So when I told him, I'm like, yeah, it's going to be very different for you to do this. The difference you're going to have to contend with on a 24-hour check is you're going to have to figure out what you can run in 24 hours and what you want to run every 24 hours. You don't want to get so many traps out that you're completely brain dead after 3 or 4 days of running the traps, and you got a gas bill you can't overcome and all that type stuff. And you're going to have to learn to set more densely when you get to a place. See, cherry picking the best locations out west on a long trap check would be very not all that productive when you come to the east, because one, we have way more cover, we have way more features, we have way more people pushing stuff around. You've got dogs that are going to be pushing deer, which are going to be moving the coyotes. You've got a lot more food type things that are changing with the season, and animals go to those places until they kind of like clear them out, and then they go somewhere else. So there are places in the east, without a doubt, especially along cities and rivers and long running ridges and the bases of the ridges and the valley. There are places you could set in November and not even think about pulling those till February, but they're not as common. And they're not as productive. And you're going to have to look at those being not productive majority of the time, which most people will give up after a while. So when someone comes from the west 7-day check to the east, what I told him is, instead of trying to be so spread out, try to have many lines set up ahead of time with the amount of traps that you can run or you want to run. And you try to take as many animals out of those as quickly as possible, which is the opposite of what he was doing in North Dakota. I'm sure he's relying on the trickle effect, where now you're going to have to rely on actually getting everything you can, or you're going to lose so much money on expenses and your catch is going to go down, and you can't afford that. So if you're going from the big line to a smaller type line, you want to go in and you want to get as many decent locations and places you can find sign and set them. And then you're going to probably also want to, you know, if you're going past a creek, throw in a mink set and a coon set. If there's a beaver down there, you throw in a beaver set, which is probably not what most Western canine trappers are used to doing. And we're gonna try to take everything we can quickly out of an area, and we're gonna pull. And then you're going to go to another area. And this could be, you know, you got four or five farms or 300-500 acres or a couple of thousand or whatever your situation is in your state. And then you're going to set those up and you're going to get as many animals out of that as you can for maybe about a week, 14 days at the most. You're going to pull those. You're going to go to a different section of your line, like just think of them as mini lines. And you're going to set that up as heavy as you can, take as many animals as you can, pull those and get it. In the East, if you try to run a trap from November till February, you're going to be seeing so many empty traps, you're probably going to have to take an antidepressant before it's over with. And please keep in mind, the East has more animals than most of these guys deal with in the West. But the advantage of long trap checks and great big tracts of ground and not a lot of features and all this other stuff we have in the East, not as much food, that trickle effect you're used to is just not going to work. So think about, and you know, like instead of like trying to take over a country, if you're going to be a commanding general of an army, look at it more like you're going to try to take over a county of a state. That's what you would concentrate on. We're not talking about doing that much ground for a trapper, but it could be going from 300 miles to a 25 mile area. And because you're not going to have permission on all of it, and then you're going to go in where you can, and you're going to get everything you can get your little grubby hands on, get it in the cooler, their own stretchers. You're going to pull them and move them and pull them and move them and pull them and move them. Now, the other part that's going to be shocking for someone coming from a place that's a 7-day trap check with lower animal numbers and you're going off of the trickle, you're going to be running 7 days of traps instead of 1 day a week. The other thing about that that's going to blow your mind is how quickly the cream is gone, even though the East has more animals. As soon as it gets hard as a fur trapper, you need to move. As soon as it starts really slowing down, you're wasting time at that point. You need to move. Because you get no more money for a coyote that took you 3 weeks to catch than it does to one that takes 3 days to catch. The other thing is the intense labor part of running a 24-hour check is astronomically higher than putting out one trap line and running it for once a week for a season. That means you're gonna be beating traps in, you're gonna be digging holes, you're gonna be putting in T-bones, you're gonna be doing a lot more sifting if you're using stakes, you're gonna be beating your elbows up. All that is like astronomically higher than someone that just remakes a set when it catches and is not moving all the time. So that was my advice to him. So if you find yourself in this situation, you're coming from a state that's got a long trap check, you move to the East, you realize you're on a 24-hour trap check, you're going to have to change how you do what you do, unless you're so good at getting permissions that you can have so many farms set up that you have permission on, that you can go in and just pick the top two or three locations and go to the next farm. When that's really hard to do. And to do that for a season is near impossible because you would have to have thousands and thousands of miles of farms with permission set up that you can get on. But if you can pull that off a couple of times a year, like Randy used to do in northern Indiana, it works great. I mean, that's what allowed him to catch, I think it was 118 coyotes in 10 days in the East. That's what allowed him to do that. He was treating it like a Western trap line, where he had big farms, he would find the best places, but he kept getting more and more farms, and he was spread out over a tremendous area. that would blow most trappers' minds about the distance he was having to go to run these trap lines. If you can pull that off without all the gates and the people problems and getting the permission, you can run it just like a Western trap line, except you're still going to have to look at them every 24 hours. Because the difference of what Randy did in Indiana, if he had the option of a 7-day check, his 118 coyotes would have probably been in the 300 to 400 coyote range for the same amount of trap checks that someone's going to check it once a week, if you follow what I'm saying. But having to do that every day, your catch is just automatically going to be lower because you only have so many hours in the day and you only have so much energy. But that's okay. It's just the situation that you're in. There's no reason to get upset about it. It's just what it is. You have to get a little bit more creative. You're going to have to work a whole lot more. But you can still get her done. You just have to look at it in a different way. Now, the last thing I want to talk about on the show tonight, guys, the way that I've started doing my demos lately is I'll come up with a topic of some kind that's usually somewhat creative and a little bit odd for most trappers to hear or to see, just to get their brains going in a more creative, positive way. And then I go to question and answer. Very rarely do we stay on that little subject that I start with, because I may only do this for like 10 or 15 minutes of an hour demo. And then we're going all over the place. But by doing something that's a little bit off the wall, they see that it's okay to be off the wall, which means it's probably okay to ask some off the wall questions, which means we get a more creative and interesting demo. But this time, with what I started with, was elevation on catching canines, it stayed there for the whole hour. And there was a pretty big group of people at my demo, which I thought that it would go in different directions, but it really didn't. It stayed on topic the whole time. So what I did, because this guy did such an amazing job on this demo area, is I looked around and there were several places that I could catch a coyote, use an elevation that I come across when I'm actually out trapping. So I want you to think about being in the east. You know, you've got a field, and the example I used, when you're an hour on the in Illinois in places, we have these great big fields. A lot of time the farmers will put in these rows that are on grade. So they're not straight, but they go through the fields and they're curving around. They're about 12 to 18 inches. They're only about a foot and a half wide. And what it does is it stops water from getting off the farm and sinks into the farm. It helps on erosion and chemical stuff in the creeks and whatever else someone wants to say it's for. But you see this a lot. And all that is like a long, think about having a big field that's got like a slope, and you've got just a long, someone went out there and made a walkway that's on grade, so the top of this thing is level, and it's gonna sweep around the hills and stuff. They're very rarely perfectly straight, because if you had perfectly flat ground, you wouldn't need these things. That is like the best place, easiest place to catch a coyote, easiest. Now, think about what happens on top of that little erosion. I wish I knew what the actual name of this thing was. I've seen them all over the country. But they're like little bitty dry dams that are just all over the place. Like I said, they're usually a foot, maybe 2 foot tall. They're a couple of feet wide. You can walk on them. Animals walk on them all the time. Now, if you're in snow, what's the first place to blow off? It's going to be on top of that little ridge. So your trap's going to be able to work better. if you get a lot of rain, where's probably the driest place going to be on that farm? On top of that little ridge. It's a great place to put a set for a coyote. Now, the habit of the coyote is he likes to be on some form of elevation because he can see better. That's just their natural habit. So what I'm describing now is an extreme version of what we're going to talk about today. So you can go up and you can put a dirt hole in the side of this little dam, dry dam, straight in so the water don't fill it up and mess with your lure and bait. And directly above that, on top of that little ridge, you blend in a trap or two. Now, that's the opposite way of thinking that a lot of coyote trappers, when they see that location, they're going to put a hole in the side of that thing because it's convenient and it's going to help it stay out of the water. Then they're going to put a trap on the bottom side. I'm not saying you won't catch coyotes if you put traps on the bottom side. I'm just saying you're going to catch way more coyotes if you put it on the top side, above the hole. Because that's the way the coyote wants to work the set if he has the option. You're giving him that option. He's going to take that option because I want you to really think about how a coyote learns. Most of us that are adults have been around enough to see a groundhog hole or pocket gophers out west. And you have these holes that are usually on an angle. Some of them are straight up and down. And if you wanted to go out and thunk one of those things in the head because you were hungry, you're going to have to not be in the doorway of that hole. You follow what I'm saying? So if you're going to stand over the hole, if it's coming at an angle towards you and you're standing in front of it with a bat waiting to, as soon as they kind of peek up, you're going to be sitting right there and they're going to scurry back down in the hole. Just like you. You start going out your door and someone's got a bat ready to hit you in the head, you're going to close the door and go back in your house. Doesn't seem like a safe place to be at the moment is walking out your door. Dude's going to smack you in the head with a baseball bat. I think coyotes, fox, cats, naturally, over time when they were young, realized if you want to catch those animals that are coming out of a hole, you have to get behind the hole so they can't see you until they pop their head up and you can pounce on them. This should make perfect sense to anybody out there. But most of the trap sets that I've seen where you have any type of elevation, you put the hole in, you put the trap below the hole because it's one way more convenient for you, the trapper, a lot of times. And you've got your dirt pattern and whatever your special juice is you're putting in there. And then you're going to have rain problems because that's where the water's going to flow down over top of everything. And the coyote, if he does get caught at your set, this is what's happening most of the time. And put trail cameras on these and you'll see that I'm telling you exactly the truth. Most sets that are put in on elevation, especially with anything that's flat on the top side, most of those trap sets work when the animal comes off the elevation and steps across the hole as they're trying to actually get deeper into the hole and they get frustrated. They're not getting caught coming up to the hole on the bottom side and getting caught in the trap. When I was using the night vision cameras, when I was doing Teachers of the Night, and we were running a bunch of Charlie Dobbins style dirt holes, which is kind of like it's a really big hole on an angle. If you've never seen one, you can go to my YouTube channel at wolfernation.com. You can see a bunch of them. And you've got, it's kind of a countersunk type bed that comes back about 12, 14 inches. The trap is in that little sink down area. It's on an angle so the water can get off the trap. But when we were watching the night vision over and over again, the coyotes that got caught were because they stepped over the hole eventually and happened to step in the trap just by sheer luck. Now, if we had a trap on the top side, it was not sheer luck because that's where the coyotes are going to be. And at our school, we go over this intensely. Some people use it, some people don't. Because it is a foreign concept. I get it. If you've been taught you dig a hole, you put a trap in front of it, because the animal's gonna come up and look in the hole. Like, there's one major problem with that theory is people seem to assume that every coyote that comes up to a set's got a broken back and they've got their neck and spinal cord fused together and they can't turn their head. So a coyote can walk up to your thing on the side and turn his head and look in the hole. He doesn't have to be in front of it. There's really no reason for him to be in front of it. He's probably learned that's not the best place to be when you're trying to eat something in the wild, which is what they're trying to do. They need to stay out of the line of vision of the way that hole's going, but we're putting a trap in the front of the way they normally wouldn't go anyway. And a lot of them are getting caught when they come off the top side and they just happen to step over and get caught. That's what we noticed on the Charlie Robbins dirt hole set, and I was just godsmacked because that went against everything that I believed. But after a few of those, you start going, okay, this is a pattern. So apparently the coyotes have not read the same book and watched the same demos that I have. Shame on them, right? I'm going to continue to do what's haphazard. No. They're up there. Let's put the trap up there. Holy cow. Now I'm catching more coyotes. Now having that ridge in the field, like I said, is an extreme, if you've ever seen them, it's like the most extreme way to do this. If you've ever seen one of Craig O'Gorman's catalogs, and if you've never seen one, dude, order one. It probably cost you $10 today to get one. Whatever it costs to the cost of the catalog and the shipping, he don't give them out for free. You need to get one of his catalogs and just look. Or get a Hoofbeats of a Wolfer book and see what he was doing years ago. This is nothing new for me, guys. I just happened to notice it because of night vision footage. Even though I saw it from Craig from way back when, in the 70s, it didn't register to me exactly what was going on until I personally saw it with night vision. So what Craig did out in that really rough country in Montana, there'd be a cattle trail coming close to a complete sheer drop-off into a draw, and he would bed a trap right on the edge, stake it, and then he would bend over and smear bait and lure over the edge of the trap. And there's countless pictures of him with coyotes hanging off a trap chain off the side of a cliff. Now, that's extreme of what I'm talking about, but it's the same principle. And he's been doing that, and I don't know where he learned that from, if he did it himself or he got it from Vernon Hopkins or somebody like that. But so what I'm saying is not something new, it's just not common today. So let's go to a less extreme version of this. Let's say you're driving down a dirt road and they grade it every now and then. And you've got where the grader has kind of pushed up, you know, the little side of the road, and it's 3 or 4 inches higher than the road, and it goes out to a field or the woods. We've all seen this. Very common. Most trappers dig a hole in that because it gives them some backing. It's going to be easy to see, and they put a trap in front of it. Yes, you catch coyotes. But you will catch way more coyotes if you dig the hole exactly the same way, you tear out the front of it so it looks like something's really been digging there, and then you put the trap on top of that little ridge that the grader put there, and you blend that back in with dirt or grass or whatever's there. Leaves, doesn't matter. Blend it in. You don't want to know what's there. You don't want a dirt pattern. So that little difference of just 3 or 4 inches can make all the difference of the world, where you know now where the coyote's going to be standing. He will be standing front feet up on that little ridge behind the hole. And he's going to spend most of his time back there smelling, digging. That's why when you set in that situation a lot, you see a lot of dig marks coming from the back, and most trappers go, well, that's an educated coyote. No, it's just a coyote being a coyote. He doesn't know that he's supposed to be down where you want him instead of where he wants to be. How many times have you dug a dirt hole on a 45 degree angle with a trap in front of it and you got digging towards the back? If you've done any amount of trapping, a lot. See, the coyote doesn't know the game that you're playing. He's not trying to outsmart you. You're trying to get him to do something he doesn't naturally want to do. He wants to be on that elevation. So when I have students, like at the school, or when I used to give a lot of personal instruction, they would notice I would be very picky about where I put my traps. And I would want some form of elevation to go off of. Because if I've got that elevation, I've got a better shot, in my opinion, of catching coyotes. Now, to take this even further, this may be a little shorter show today than I thought it was going to be, I want to talk about backward dirt holes. Now, if you don't believe that coyotes like elevation, you're definitely not going to believe this. Now, I've talked about Craig O'Gorman a lot. His standard way of setting sets are like badger hole sets on the sides of banks. He digs a hole, he puts a trap in front of it. He, depending on what the ground is doing, they could be in different locations there, but they're somewhere in front or to the side of the trap. Now, if you've got a straight up and down bank, or it goes on an elevation of a slope, then goes straight up for 6 or 8 feet, what I'm saying is irrelevant at this point. Then you're going to put the trap differently, more traditionally. But let's say that I'm going to keep this in the east. You're going along the woods, and sometimes when it rains really bad, I'm talking like really bad, it'll erode some of the grass out and stuff like that. And it'll be more of a gentle slope. Or you just have the side of a hill coming down on a more of a gentle slope. I'm talking about 45 degree angle. I'm just talking about a gentle slope. Some of the funniest stuff I've heard was back when Slim Peterson and Craig O'Gorman would go back and forth on where the trap should be. See, Slim had a totally different approach to coyotes. He also observed that coyotes like elevation. So he would put the hole the backwards way of what a trapper would put the hole. So if you're on your knees and the ground's coming up in front of your face, you put the hole and put the trap underneath. Standard, go look at any YouTube video, that's what you'll see. What Slim did, and it helped that he was slim, because if you're a bigger boy like me, it's a core exercise that you need to be in shape for. You're going to fall on your face. You get above where you're going to put the hole in, instead of having it going facing with the elevation, you're going to put it in backwards so it's facing uphill. Your hole is literally facing uphill. And then he would put a trap uphill, but in front of his hole. I've done this a lot, but not as much as the way that I like to do it. I like to do it with, I've got elevation, I put the hole on the bottom side of the elevation and blend the traps on top. Slim would invert the trap, or the trap set, where the hole is further downhill than where his trap is above it. But he's still using elevation to catch the coyotes. Now, both Slim Peterson and Craig O'Gorman, probably two of the smartest coyote men in the last 50 years in this country. And anybody that's going to be honest is going to probably have to agree with that statement. Slim Peterson and Craig O'Gorman lived in the heads of coyotes. They were their worst nightmares. they studied the coyote. They watched coyotes. They didn't have the technology that we do today so we can physically just watch them like a TV show. They went off of tracks and snow and observation and years of this. They figured things out. But Slim inverting that trap is still using that elevation to catch the coyotes. So it's kind of the same principle. But I will tell you, it's harder to put a set in like that because you're wanting to fall forward because gravity's pushing you down. And that could have been part of the reason that Craig didn't like doing it, because it is, it's like dang near doing a static sit-up while you put the set in. It's uncomfortable. For skinny people, probably not that big a deal. But that's what we talked about at the demo. And I didn't bring up the inverted set at the demo. Actually, a trapper in the stand said, well, if they want to come from elevation, why don't we flip the trap set around? See, I knew right there I was talking to somebody that was thinking. And then I went to the story about Slim Peterson and Craig having arguments about this. My advice to anybody that wants to be a coyote trapper, if what I'm saying to you seems like hocus pocus and whatever, I'm not selling you anything. Podcast is free. I have no agenda to tell you this, except I want you to go catch more coyotes. That's the agenda. Now, when you start anything that's really different, here's my advice. Start with 10%. So if you're going to run 100 traps, let's say dirt holes, just to keep the math easy, take 10 of those and use elevation. Either the way that I like to do it or the way that Slim liked to do it. Where he inverts the dirt hole going uphill, or where I like to put the visual and the smell below in the side of a bank and have the trap sitting right on top. Do that with 10% of your traps. Watch what happens. If you can't bring yourself to just trusting that, put a trap in front of the hole like normal, have your hole, then on top of the elevation, put a different trap. If you're gonna be using, you know, like one stake or something to do this with longer chain, use two different traps, you know which trap the animal was caught in. Lo and behold, you're gonna start figuring out you're catching way more coyotes behind the set than you are in front of the set. Then you'll build some confidence where you can take that set away in front. Plus, it's gonna cut down on skunks and possums and raccoons, because that's not their habit, that's a coyote's habit. If you're not trying to catch those other animals, it's a relief. So think about what you're doing when you're out doing it. And once you get some confidence in that 10%, crank it up to 20, 30, 40, 50, whatever you want to do. I still use traditional sets, but it's probably more in the 10% range. If I've got elevation, that's a guarantee that's where I'm going to put that trap, because that's where the coyotes have showed me repeatedly that's what they're going to do. So instead of trying to get them to do something they don't want to do, I just want to put the trap where they're naturally going to be. And if you'll try that, I think you'll find out that you'll catch more coyotes. It's way more interesting. And if you're with other trapping friends, it'll blow their minds. So there you go. Using elevation or inverting a dirt hole set to catch more coyotes.